Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Warren Zanes was a member of the 1980s band The Del Fuegos and has shared the stage with Bruce Springsteen. Warren is also the New York Times best-selling author of a biography of the late Tom Petty. So who would be more qualified than Warren to write the story of Bruce Springsteen's most surprising album and one that could be considered the boss's most important record ever? No, I can't think of anyone else either. Warren's book is Deliver Me From Nowhere, The Making of Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska. Warren writes beautifully about this 1982 album. It features 10 dark story songs that Bruce recorded by himself, with no plans to release the songs as an album. Warren talked to Bruce himself and many other musicians, including Roseanne Cash and former Beta guest Stephen Van Zandt. Beta's resident musicologist Steve Gotcher talked with Warren Zanes about the album that Bruce considers to be his best.
Why would an artist who, after making his fifth album, which went to number one, and contained his first top 10 single, make a record like Nebraska, which couldn't even be played on FM radio alongside the other rock hits of the day?
New Jersey Turnpike, riding on a wet night, neath the refinery's glow, out where the great black rivers flow. License registration, I ain't got none, but I got a clear conscience about the things that I done.
This was such a dramatic, from a marketplace perspective, such a dramatic misstep. Why would someone do it? That was the question that really kind of propelled me.
So how is it that Nebraska came to be recorded in the bedroom of a rented home in Colts Neck, New Jersey, with just Bruce and his guitar and a few other acoustic instruments?
Yeah, well, the really important thing to, you know, acknowledge up front is that this is the only official release of Bruce Springsteen's that when he recorded it, he didn't know he was recording an official release. So he thought he was just making demos. And he was recording in his bedroom to a TAC 144 recorder, which is a consumer model, which uses cassette tapes that you could have gotten at CVS at the time. And he was doing that because he realized as he came into his 30s that he was spending all his money on recording studios. So he buys this recorder thinking he's making demos and thinking he's just saving a little money, doing it in his bedroom rather than going to do his thinking and his experimentation and exploration in a commercial recording studio.
Well, not everything dies, baby, that's a fact. Maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair pretty, and make me
him thinking that he was just making demos allowed him the freedom to do whatever the heck he wanted to do. And then when he recorded this record and listened back to it, it became something else to him. What was that?
What he was hearing after the fact was, as you say, this the sound of an artist deep in his freedom of expression. And he went into to re-record the stuff, and in his words, because these are very, these are songs are like short stories. Flannery O'Connor was one of his big influences. But his way of describing what happened when he went in to re-record was, he said, "I lost my characters."
Right.
So no characters, no story. No stories, no Nebraska.
There was a film from 1973 called Badlands that was directed by Terrence Malick and starring Martin Sheen and Sissy Spacek. And that had an influence on at least one of the songs, but maybe others on Nebraska. What happened there?
he was by himself in this rental house where he recorded Nebraska. And, you know, he was just up late by himself. And Terrence Malick's Badlands came on the television. And it's a film about Charles Starkweather and the Starkweather killings of 1958, when Charles Starkweather and his accomplice Carolyn Fugate killed 11 people. That's what the film takes as its subject matter. And Springsteen is watching this, and in some kind of internal connection, he sees something about his early childhood in there. Now, obviously, his early childhood was not about serial murderers, but there is something in the tone and the temperament and the desperation of these characters that he just made this connection that nobody else could have seen. Mm-hmm. And it gave him a song, Nebraska, in which he takes the first-person point of view as if he is Charles Starkweather.
I saw her standing on her front lawn, just a twirling her baton. Me and her went for rides in tennis and people down.
But it becomes this door into an exploration of his early childhood, which was a time of a lot of conflict for him that maybe nobody else would have seen. But that's the wild thing to me, is that he's looking at a film about a serial murderer and he's saying, this reminds me of when I lived with my grandparents.
We talk to a lot of artists who talk about honesty being the doorway into people relating to them when they do their comedy routine on stage, write songs. And it seems like the honesty, the level of honesty that he got to on this record, is what made it so relatable to so many people.
He started with his first record using honesty because I think, you know, he grew up listening to records. He, like so many listeners, how do we know? I don't know. But we do know when it feels like it's not honest.
Yeah.
And what do we go to songs for? You know, we go for a lot of emotional needs. You know, the popular song is a really interesting form, how we take it in, how we use it. But we're going for something that if the honesty is absent, we're not getting our needs met as listeners. So Springsteen knew this and he'd been practicing it well before Nebraska. But being that kind of honest artist, when he then was going through this kind of personal crisis and making a record in the midst of it, it was brutally honest.
Right, right. There were other things going on that influenced this record. American culture in the early 80s had some impact on the creation of Nebraska. What were those things that influenced from the cultural perspective?
Yeah, well, when he was on the River tour, he was already saying some things about Reagan's America.
Right.
And, you know, Reagan's campaign was, you know, mourning in America. And it was a very, you know, it was a full color America, a very white America, a very middle class America. It was a representation of life in this country that left a lot of people out. Mm-hmm. And the people that were left out of Reagan's image of this country, the ones that Springsteen had already been writing about. And so it put him in a position of like, if that America is missing, it's my role as a songwriter to expose that place and those people. And he did it.
It looked me kind of funny, some kind of funny suddenly. Still at the end of every hard day, people find some.
And in doing so, he's going, you know, from that full, vibrant color of Reagan's, let's call it propaganda, and into something with less color. Mm-hmm. Like the deeper you go into it, there's less color. This is a very black and white project aesthetically and spiritually. And the other thing that it was at odds with because of that was MTV's emergence, which was, however, different from Reagan's America. It was also a full color thing. It was saturated pigment and artists throwing in big old shoulder pads. And Nebraska was so almost defiantly out of sync with that.
Right.
When I was, you know, a teenager and it came out, I connected with the desperation of the characters in the songs, but I also connected with the defiance that I felt Springsteen was showing in turning against his moment.
Yeah, and some have said that because of that, it actually is a punk record. Would you agree with that?
I agree 100%. That's how I received it. Now, Nebraska didn't sound like punk. It was, you know, it was really driven by acoustic guitar and had a style that people would associate with folk. But that defiance, that refusal to meet 1981 and 1982 in that saturated color, early MTV, Reagan's America world, that felt like more punk than so many of the records that declared themselves punk.
Right. So we talked about this before, but I want to expand on it a little bit. Bruce tried to record these songs in the studio with his band, but the process failed utterly. Why did that happen that way?
He tried to make this a band record, but I think sometimes we have a songwriter who can do a number of things. And as he's coming into the breadth of his gifts, he's got to start making choices. And sometimes he chooses that solitary path. And when it's supposed to be the more solitary and you still try to put it with the band, the singer has to project up and over that band. It means they got to push to get on top of this sound. And the E Street Band is a big sound.
Yeah.
And I think some songs need the singer to pull back. If you pull back with a band, you're going to get buried. So there were some very practical elements. And then once he was without a band, the singing could get closer to talking. And when the singer gets into a kind of talking style, it pulls the listener like 12 feet closer. It creates this intimacy. It means the singer can get, you know, start to like, you hear the breath more. Uh-huh. And the effect is different. And I think clearly for these songs, Springsteen was going, that's how it's got to be done.
Daddy sweats the same job from morning to morn. Yeah, I walk home on the same dirty streets where I was born. Block, I can hear my little sister in the front seat blowing that horn. The sounds echoing all down Michigan Avenue. How Mr. the day my number comes in, I ain't ever gonna ride no used car again.
After the release of Nebraska, Bruce took a road trip to his new home in the Hollywood Hills. But something happened along the way. What happened?
He was driving from New Jersey to Los Angeles in a circuitous path with his friend Matt to move into the first home that he'd ever purchased for himself, which was in Los Angeles. And he has this depressive event. I think there's a connection between Nebraska and that breakdown. Mm-hmm. I think he went into something that just was destabilizing, ultimately productively destabilizing. Mm-hmm. He goes into therapy after that and he gets help. But he doesn't make that connection, and that's what we did in the interview together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we didn't want to make it causal. I wrote these songs and had a breakdown. It's never that kind of simple.
Right.
But he did explore a time in his life that was deep down in there, there was traumatic content that hadn't been processed, and that he started to process it in these songs he was writing.
I heard the wind rustling through the trees, and ghostly voices rose from the fields. I ran with my heart pounding down that broken path, with the devil snapping at my heels.
How do you think Nebraska is going to be remembered in the history of Springsteen's recordings, in the history of rock and roll?
I think it's that message to songwriters and the people who make recordings, that sometimes you break it down to its most essential elements. Stop putting things on top of it. Stop trying to make it better. Release it before you feel comfortable with it.
Hmm.
And it might be the virtue that it most needs.
Warren Zanes, thank you so much for talking to us today. And thanks for your fascinating book, Deliver Me From Nowhere. It's an amazing journey into Bruce Springsteen's creative process.
Thank you so much.
Warren Zanes is the author of Deliver Me From Nowhere, The Making of Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska. He talked with Steve Gotcher. Find out more about Warren and Nebraska at wpr.org/beta.
I'm not anti-religious by any stretch of the imagination, but I am anti-hypocrisy. I am anti-manipulation. And so for me, the idea of religion is not bound to any organized hierarchy.
Coming up, the New York Times best-selling and award-winning crime fiction author S.A. Cosby joins us to talk about his novel, All the Sinners Bleed. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.